Coming to you from the heart of the Rockies in Salida, Colorado, it's the Badfish SUP Journal. What's up, friends? You guys thought I forgot about you, didn't you? Crazy couple of months. I apologize for not getting one of these done sooner. Hope you guys are all doing well, staying safe. Hope you've been having a good time, spring and summer. You can probably hear the river in the background. I'm actually walking down a trail along the Arkansas River, just below Browns Canyon National Monument, which is a wilderness area and a famous whitewater run just outside of Salida. And my daughter and I are headed down to a little swimming beach we like to go to for the evening. Man, what's been going on? Last 2.5 months have been crazy. Let me try to catch you up. Let's see. Well, the river came up and then came back down again. And the new wave that I designed and built in Salida, the office wave, came in, and we had river surfing for pretty much 2 straight months, which was awesome. We had a great time. Tons of local kids got into it this year, which was a lot of fun. I actually surfed so much that I was kind of stoked when the wave dropped out because my legs hurt. So that was fun. Lots and lots of people bought paddle boards. I think there's a lot of new people in our sport now from as a result of COVID. I've been hearing it from all over the country. All our retailers are doing really well, selling a lot of boards. Lots of brands are selling boards. It's just, I think it's true of the whole outdoors. People have really decided that, you know, without some of the things we're used to doing to entertain ourselves, you know, like going on summer vacations on airplanes, or maybe the kids aren't going to summer camp this year, or whatever's changed. The outdoors is a great place to spend time with your family and be safe and be distanced from other people. Of course, most of us already knew that, right? But we got a lot of new friends out there doing it now. So it'll be really interesting to see if that has staying power, or if that's a trend that doesn't really last. But certainly when you look at bikes, when you look at camping gear, when you look at even RVs, paddleboards, kayaks, sales of all those products are way up. I mean, there's just no denying it. And so I think the positive thing is more people are getting outside. It's more people to care about the places we love. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if that has staying power as we progress through this global pandemic. So today, this episode, we're going to talk about self-support paddling. And what self-support paddling is basically like backpacking on a paddleboard. So loading up your gear with dry bags, strapping it to a board, taking off for a few days and camping along the waterway with all your stuff on board. And it's something that we got into really because of the passion of my business partner and co-founder, the brand, Zach Hughes. And then also Mike Tavares, Mike T, and some early trips that those guys did. And later in the episode, I'm going to interview my partner, Zach, talk a little bit about the history of how he got into self-support paddling, some of the early boards he designed for self-support paddling, and how we ended up at the Selfie 14, which is our new board this year, 14-foot inflatable designed specifically for self-support paddling. And those guys, Mike T and Zach, and also Bradley Hilton, who I'll also interview on this episode, have done some pretty amazing self-support trips around the American Southwest. I was lucky enough to get to go on one this last September on the Green and Colorado Rivers. But what's so cool is you don't have to have some crazy wilderness area or, you know, far away place to make a self-support trip happen. And some of our friends and team riders sent in some of the self-support trips that they've done on paddleboards, And I'm going to share those emails here in a little bit, because what I hope to communicate is that you really can do this type of paddling where you live. There's probably a lake or maybe a slow moving river or somewhere that you can get out and explore and just live off the board for a few days and experience kind of that amazing immersion you get when you can, you know, not be getting notifications from your smartphone and not be worrying about work for a few days. And really, the way the world is right now, I mean, what's more appealing than that, right? Just getting out, getting away from it, getting back to the basics. So we're going to talk all about self-support paddling today. As I said, I've got an interview with Zach and an interview with Bradley talking about their experiences self-support paddling. I'm really sorry it took me so long to record another one of these. I'm going to try to get back on a regular schedule. It was just insane for a couple months, but we're back, and I'm really grateful you're here listening, and hope you guys are staying safe and enjoying yourselves this summer. All right. Hey, I realized I went through that whole intro without introducing myself. My name's Mike Harvey. I'm the co-founder and one of the owners of Badfish SUP. I don't think I'm a famous enough podcaster to assume you just knew that. So, hey, thanks for being here. And what we're going to do is I'm going to read you some emails I got from friends and team riders about memorable self-support trips that they've done as a way of kind of demonstrating some of the variety of trips that are out there and the creativity that goes into planning these things. And also to the geographic variety of trips that are out there. And so I've got four trips to tell you about, and then we'll get into an interview with Bradley Hilton and Zach Hughes. So my first one's from Norm Hahn, and Norm is a really awesome dude who lives in Squamish, British Columbia. He's been in the game for a long time, stand-up paddling. In fact, he made a really cool movie a few years ago called Stand. And Google that up and check it out. It's a really inspiring movie about the work he's done with what in Canada they call First Nations communities up around his home of coastal British Columbia. And so I encourage you to check that out. So Norm talks about, and by the way, I'm going to brutalize the pronunciation of these names of areas in coastal BC. So Norm, if you're listening, I apologize. You can call in and correct me later. So he says, to date, my favorite self-supported trip was last spring in the Gitgat territory, the territory I've worked in for the last 20 years. I'm adopted into the Raven clan of the Gitgat people and had heard from the elders about this old grease trail or trade route that took the Gitgat people from their territory to trade with their neighbors to the north. We used inflatables, and it was a historic journey as no one had been on this over this trail in over 100 years. In short, we started at the petroglyphs in Old Town, their previous village from 150 years ago, and on the ocean in the Kitkat Inlet. Again, sorry, I don't know how to pronounce these names. Norm will fix this for us. From there, we paddled up the Quail, what looks to me like the Quail River, and found this ancient 2-kilometer-long grease trail that connected the Quail River to the Eschtal River. It was like discovering a dinosaur bone. It was amazing, ancient, and looked like a trail that had thousands of years of use, except for no one had been on it for over 100 years. We hiked our boards over the trail into a couple of lakes, which then dropped us into the Eschtal River drainage. The Quail Eschtal make up one of the largest intact coastal river ecosystems on the coast and had the most incredible old-growth forests I've ever seen on the coast. The Eschtal dumps into the Skeena River, and from there we paddled back out to the ocean. We finished in, oh my goodness, this name, I don't know. I'm not sure how to pronounce this one. So they finished in another community, First Nations community. It was a couple hundred kilometers, and it was a powerful cultural and historic journey. He says he can't remember the distance, but he thinks it's about 150 to 200 kilometers, which none of us in America even know how far that is anyway. But thanks for sending that in, Norm. That sounds amazing. I mean, for someone that has lived their entire adult life in the high desert, I would really love to explore this part of the world and be paddling in these forests and
in these coastal rivers. So that's a really cool trip to hear about. Norm's done all kinds of stuff. He has a business up there too, where he actually takes people on self-support stand-up paddle trips. So look him up, Norm Hahn, spelled HANN.com. And I mean, man, I think that would be a pretty ultimate stand-up paddle vacation if you were looking for someone, an expert in that area to go with. So I got another one from our friend Shannon Thomas. Shannon's another really interesting guy from Dayton, Ohio. So in the Midwest, where I worked on a whitewater park there for about 10 years that we finished in 2017. And now right in downtown Dayton, there's some urban surf waves, river surf waves. And Shannon owns a business called Surf Dayton Company. And he's really built an incredible scene around the river surfing there on the Great Miami River. And what I love about what Shannon does is he just finds adventure in his backyard. He's been all over the place, surfed and paddles rivers all over the place, but Dayton, Ohio's his home. And he's made a really cool adventure hub. So I'm going to tell you about this trip he did. He says, my biggest trip and most memorable was on the Scioto River, a class one scenic river stretching 231 miles from Kenton, Ohio, down to the Ohio River in Portsmouth. I did it in a total of 8 days out of 10. He had to take a break to go to his grandmother's funeral in the middle of the trip. Wow. 5 days, then did the last 100 miles in 3 days. The long paddle days, solitude, and no distractions is really what I needed to grieve. Far as I knew, we were the first to do the whole river in a trip like that. There were tons of portages, log jams early on, and then very difficult dams to portage with all of our gear. One night north of Columbus, we came across an island in the river, and there was an old abandoned house on stilts. We ended up hammock camping under that night. It was super creepy and awesome. I just love long river trips. You can't get lost. You just go with the flow of the river, and it makes me feel like I'm on a Huckleberry Finn-like adventure. Just eat, sleep, and paddle. Man, that's awesome, Shannon. I love that. Just a backyard river that certainly isn't a place people think of doing multi-day backcountry trips. I've seen the Scioto River runs through Columbus, Ohio, and you know, it's kind of urban in places, but certainly places where, especially with that thick Midwestern foliage, you can just feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. So that's super cool. Got another one here from British Columbia from our friend Rita Boychuk. So Rita is our Canadian sales rep and just an incredible instructor and ambassador for stand-up paddling in Canada. You can check her out at RitaSups.com, I believe. So she did a cool trip in British Columbia, but now we're in the mountainous inland part of British Columbia on the Slocan Lake and River. So she says she did a trip from the north end of Slocan Lake on flat water down the river, which was class one to class three rapids, and took out on a beach after paddling down to the confluence with the Kootenai River. So the total trip was 3 days, 2 nights, and it was about 60 miles. So that's perfect. She took the selfie. So she had a selfie this last winter and was able to use the selfie to do it. And she says the most memorable part of the trip was when a storm started rolling in on day two, which was my first part on the river. After making it through the Lemon Creek Rapid, I came around the corner into an upstream wind. Knowing there was a good stopping point coming up, I dug deep. As I could see the bridge, my planned emergency stop, the winds howled and the trees swayed, and a group of three on inflatable air mattresses blew by me going upstream at double the speed I'd been paddling downstream, and one of them shouting out, "But our shuttle's the other way." That's awesome. You know you're in trouble if the people on air mattresses are blowing by you at a faster speed than you're going downstream. So that's super cool. And another one where she just figured out a little trip she could link up in her backyard. Thanks for that one, Rita. That's awesome. And the last one's from one of the OGs, Badfish OGs, our good friend Brittany Parker, who runs our social media and was, I believe, our second ever team rider. And Brittany is from Colorado. She's a Colorado native. So she did her first ever self-support on a paddleboard was on Ruby Horse Thief section of the Colorado River, which actually, if you've seen the video that we made for the selfie board, that's where it was shot, was on the Ruby and Horse Thief Canyons. Classic Western, Southwestern desert canyons. With just total flat water. There's really no rapids on the whole stretch. So she did it. It's 25 miles. And this is what she wrote about it. It was my first self-support experience. It's a perfect section for the first time self-support overnighter. It's essentially flat water with some swirly currents here and there during higher flows. The campsite within the Black Rock area are picturesque with their soft sand and beautiful stark contrast between the red desert colors and the black rocks lining the river. You can enjoy cliff jumping and side hikes right from camp. It's a remote section of the Colorado River except for the train tracks running along the river right side, and it's runnable any time of the year. Yeah, Ruby Horse Thief is a classic, so that's one that we often use for just a quick river trip getaway. But the point being that, you know, here's people from all over North America that have figured out self-support trips that can happen in their local area, and they all just talk about kind of the magic and the experience you get when you just start going down a river or through a lake or across a piece of water and living off that board. So very cool. Encourage you. And if you have ideas for self-support trips, we'd love to hear about them. Send us an email to info@badfishsup.com. I want to know about what your self-support trip ideas are, or maybe you have questions that we can help answer about doing self-support stand-up paddle trips. So next up, we're going to have an interview with my business partner and good friend and co-founder of Bad Fish, Zach Hughes. And so for those of you that don't know Zach, Zach is the creative, the designer behind everything we do at Bad Fish. Bad Fish started in his garage when he started making river surfing boards back in the mid-2000s, like 2007-ish. And we'll get into Zach's original inspiration for building self-support boards and doing self-support trips and talk all about how that got started at Bad Fish. So here comes Zach Hughes. All right, so I'm here in the Bad Fish warehouse with my buddy and business partner, co-founder of Bad Fish, Zach Hughes. Say what's up, Zach.
What's up, everybody? How's it going?
Yeah, good, man. So we're talking today about self-support paddling, and you know, for Bad Fish, for our brand and our family, you really are the initial inspiration for doing self-support trips. And so that first one you did, that paddle across Lake Powell with Mike T. What was the original inspiration you had for that?
I was just trying to get back to some of my days in Prescott College, where some of the best trips I did were sea kayaking trips in the Sea of Cortez. And it was really kind of my favorite thing I did in college. And I was just kind of missing that type of travel and that type of adventure. So I just kind of got a wild hair to build a board that could paddle the length of Lake Powell and carry all my gear.
Yeah, and that board was, I mean, my God, that was an incredible piece of sculpture. So the board was called the Busito. Talk a little bit about that board, but I'm trying to remember when you pulled up at the old shop with that board on the trailer. So you drove out to California and got that piece of foam. What did those guys think when you picked up that piece of foam for that thing?
Yeah, I think they thought I was crazy. It was about the thickness of about 5 surfboards stacked on each other.
Yeah.
And I really had no idea how I was going to shape it. But I had a concept of what I thought would work well for the first board, kind of a canoe melted into a paddleboard, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. So describe what you mean by canoe. Like it was actually your gear was inside the board, sort of.
Yeah, it resembled the board that these guys have paddled across the oceans in, basically.
Yeah.
So it was basically if you took the bow of a canoe and then flattened it into a paddleboard deck standing area and then brought the canoe back on the tail, the idea was is there was some foam and, you know, area to hold your gear into the board and that your gear wouldn't fall off the board.
Yeah. And how long was the board again? Was it...
The Busito was 14 foot.
14, yeah, and it was called the Busito. I don't know if we said that yet. But
Yeah, the Busito was named after a classic rig we had in Honduras.
Right.
It was a bus that we all traveled.
Bus.
Yeah, the minibus, who was our buddy Blair's, and we always used that as our shuttle vehicle, and it was like painted like a Guatemalan crazy vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, now I remember you building this board, and just the shaping process itself was unreal because you carved down into this chunk of foam, and there. The lines on it were beautiful, but like, I mean, that thing had to be just an unbelievable project to get through.
Yeah, it was a great challenge. So I had this idea and then I started carving the foam. And as it took shape, the glassing process was definitely challenging. I had to rotate it on many different angles and different ways to get the glass into all the different areas. It probably I bet it took me, you know, 5 or 6 weeks to build the board.
Dude, I'm amazed you built it that quickly. And so, you took the board, and I remember the first time that I paddled with you with the board, we went up to Twin Lakes, and I had just a regular 14 foot race board, and you had the Busito, and you're kind of training. And I remember the first paddle stroke I took when I stood on the Busito, I actually pulled myself forward on the board because it was so hard to move the board. It was heavy, right? I mean,
yeah, it wasn't a light board. That was one of the drawbacks of that board, is that it was so heavy in the end, and there was so much glass and just material. So that was part of the learning process on the self-support mission here. But I do remember that day we paddled up there, and you took your first stroke and almost paddled yourself right off the board. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it was like my body was the weak point, you know? Like I pulled in the water, and it pulled my body forward.
Yeah.
But you guys did.
It took 5 or 10 strokes to get it going.
Right, yeah. But then you did it. So you paddled. How many miles was that first trip?
That first trip with Mike T and I was 140 miles.
Yeah.
The length of Lake Powell. That's pretty much height, the old height marina down to Waweep.
Yeah. And so, but it worked. I mean, you did the mission and.
Yeah. We did it. It was awesome. It was the start and the inspiration for all the trips we've done.
Yeah.
We had a lot of wind and we had some crazy weather. We had flash floods and all kinds of stuff on that trip. The biggest drawback of the Busito on that trip in the end was the canoe shaped bow and crosswinds. The crosswind across the bow, I would be stuck on one side paddling into the wind, and I couldn't get off a right stroke or a left stroke for such a long distance because I just couldn't turn the bow into the wind. It was like a sail.
Right.
Yeah.
So that obviously taught you a lot because you figured out that the board needed to be a little lower profile and paddle better.
I realized that the board needed to be lower profile. I also, the board paddled amazing, but the wind resistance and I couldn't manage the board by myself. So anytime we hit the beach, Mike T had to basically help me lift the board out of the water,
right,
being a fiberglass board and being so big that I couldn't barely physically lift it myself.
Yeah. I remember that thing was a monster to wrangle around.
Yeah.
We'll post some pictures of that board so you can check out the Busito. It's amazing to see, just as a work of art. So the next round of boards you did was the first time you called a board the Selfie. You did Selfie, and you did Selfie 16s. You did three of them, right?
Yeah. I went back to San Diego. I bought three more blanks for basically the new idea, which was kind of going with more of a modern kind of race board, an ocean race SUP design, and fusing that into a self-support platform. And so that was a 16-foot board, and I built three of those in the shop. And I made, I got rid of that big bow, and I made them much leaner and better to deal with the wind.
Yeah. And I can't remember the first trip you did. Was that the San Juan? And
yeah, that was the first trip. So then Bradley Hilton came in, and he became our third partner in these trips. So that was Mike T, Bradley, and I. And we did Bluff, Utah, down the San Juan, all the way into Lake Powell, down to just above the dam, and then back up to Bullfrog Marina. Ooh. That was a 260-mile paddle.
Wow. Man, dude, that was a big mission. Now that I did the 165 miler with you, those numbers mean something now, you know?
I won't lie. On day 8 of that trip, it took us 8 days to do that trip.
Yeah.
We averaged 30-something miles a day.
Yeah.
And by day 8, I think all of us decided that a 6-day hardcore trip is a good window, because day 7 and 8 hurt pretty bad.
Right. Yeah, no, I could see that. How many days was our trip this fall? That was five.
We did it in 5 days.
Yeah, we did it 5 days. And I totally enjoyed the experience, but I was really over paddling by the fifth day.
33 miles a day will do that to you.
Yeah, totally. So the Selfie, the Selfie 16 paddled really well. Talk about just the way you rigged the deck, and were you happy with the way all that stuff worked?
I mean, the boards paddled amazing. They had incredible glide. They carried the weight really well. They were 32 inches wide, so they were really stable and gave, a nice platform for living on.
Yeah.
The gear tie downs worked really well. I mean, the boards were hugely successful, but they weren't really something that Badfish was going to be able to produce,
right,
make, sell to people.
Yeah.
It was an experience that we could share with anyone.
Right.
So that was really the biggest thing I learned from those boards, was that it was great for the three of us that had them.
Yeah.
It was a niche little thing we were able to do together, but we weren't going to be able to have more people join us. We weren't going to be able to lend them out. We weren't going to be able to
right.
you know, share the experience with anyone.
Yeah. So the next trip you guys did, you took the Bad Fishers, and you did a really unusual section of river for, at least for us from Western river runners, is not something people do very often. Talk a little bit about first just the trip that you did, and then we'll talk about how the boards worked.
Yeah. So once again, it was Mike T. Bradley and I, and we met up at Lake Mead right above the Hoover Dam.
Yeah.
And we did a trip that basically was below the Hoover Dam down into Lake Mojave, crossed Lake Mojave, portaged a dam down into the Colorado, and continued all the way through Lake Havasu. And that was about a 150-mile trip. Wow. That was probably one of the most adventurous trips we'd ever been on.
Yeah.
We had 40-mile-an-hour downstream winds for multiple days.
It's crazy.
And we basically surfed knee-high or bigger bumps on fully loaded Bad Fishers all the way across Lake Havasu. And there was no boats on the water. I mean, it was like people thought we were absolutely out of our minds when we pulled into the marina.
Well, and it was late enough too. It was November, right? Because that is kind of a big power boat, jet ski type area. But you guys were out in November, I think, right?
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So it kept some of the boats out maybe anyway. That's crazy. So there's a really good blog post, if you guys want to check it out, on our website about this trip, where they're surfing these downwinders. I mean, I got to believe you guys are the only people to ever have that experience. I mean,
honestly, if we hadn't had those winds, we would have probably never completed that trip in the timeline we set out for.
Yeah.
We just got graced, and we had these crazy downstream winds, which were unheard of.
Yeah, and what was the camping like down there? Because that's not a place that typically people like do these types of self-support trips. And
yeah, well, the camping up high right out of like below the Hoover Dam.
Yeah, and
Black Canyon. I mean, that was like the first quarter of the first day.
Yeah.
And then the camping worked out pretty well. What we'll do is I'll Google Earth the trip, and I'll actually take a line and draw it down the river, and I'll work out every 30-mile day, and I'll know exactly before we go where those camping locations could be.
Yeah.
And so there was really only, when we got downstream of Laughlin, where we were into the casinos and we were into a lot of private property right on the rivers.
Yeah.
We had to hit a certain location to camp and not be in anybody's space.
Right.
But surprisingly it worked out quite well, but we knew ahead of time where we would approximately be able to camp if we made our 30 miles a day.
Yeah. So that's a good thing for people to realize, is that, like, you know, if you're using Google Earth as a tool to make sure you kind of can plan your trip somewhat, because you think, oh, it'll all just work out, but you're at the end of a long bit of mileage, and like, you start getting kind of desperate for a place to pull over sometimes.
Oh, and especially if it starts getting to be dark.
Yeah, exactly. Because
once dark hits, you're kind of done.
Right.
And we did have the one night below Laughlin, we had to choose a pretty small beach to camp on. It wasn't ideal.
Yeah.
And then the river came up so much overnight that we had to evacuate up further up the beach. It basically came up and started touching our boards that we were sleeping on.
Oh, wow.
And we had to, like, go back up into this just filthy, like, sandy four-wheel drive road and sleep there through the night.
Yeah.
So we did have one night of less than ideal camping.
Right.
Yeah.
So you guys took the Bad Fishers on there, which, just talk a little bit about, like, what were the things about the Bad Fisher that made you realize that an inflatable might be a good platform for these trips? And then what were kind of the downsides that helped you, you know, as you moved on to design the next board?
Really, the biggest downside and the only downside of the Bad Fisher for that trip is that it was a very slow board to paddle.
Yeah.
To make 30 plus miles
a day. 36 inches wide. Yeah,
36 inches wide. You know, it just, for really, like, gung-ho getting mileage done,
yeah,
it wasn't the perfect platform.
Yeah.
But the things that were amazing about it was the usability, was beaching the board, never having to worry about a ding.
Right.
Pulling the boards up and sleeping on the boards and living off the board, which with the glass boards, we could never do that. We couldn't. You had to be so careful of those glass boards to not damage them, or else you're done.
Right,
you know,
right.
You're fixing a board on the side of the river or whatever. So being able to, like, pull the board up on the beach, put your sleeping pad on the board, sleep on the board, live on the board, cook on the board, do all this stuff up out of the sand and the dirt was just kind of an eye opener. It was it was really nice.
Yeah, because I remember you came back from that trip and
this had always been sort of this like side project for you that we thought, you know, maybe there'd be something there, but we weren't sure. And, you know, as far as like something that we could do as a production board. But I remember you guys came back from that trip and you were like, man, I think we could do this. And you were pretty inspired, I think, to design what became the Selfie 14.
Yeah. Every trip that we've done from the first one with Mike T from the Busito, you know, has been a learning step towards the next design.
Yeah.
And really that Bad Fisher trip, you know, was insanely humbling. Like the first 10 strokes on those boards with fully loaded gear, I thought there was no way we were making it to the takeout. Luckily, Mother Nature gave us downstream winds we couldn't ever have begged for and blew us all the way to the takeout.
Yeah.
Like,
that'll never happen again in your entire life.
Yeah. So that was a miracle. But everything kind of led to the next step. And coming home from that trip, I remember being in a meeting with you and I was inspired to make the Selfie 14.
Yeah.
I knew that 14 foot was going to be the right length. Inflatable was going to be the best platform for everybody out there to try to use and people to get on board with.
Yeah.
And then taking the tie downs, the anchor points, how the gear goes on the board, where the bags go, how you integrate yourself with the board every day and how you actually live off the board.
Yeah.
It all kind of came together to finally get to that Selfie 14.
Right. Right. So the, just so people know too, you know, the style of trip that I guess, you know, is partially inspired by Mike T, but also Zach is definitely down for is these really long days and like doing big mileage over a relatively short amount of time. And you don't have to do that. Like you could just, you know, it's absolutely pleasurable and acceptable to do less miles a day, have more time at camp, hike, that sort of thing. Just so you know, these trips, that's not what happens. Now that I've been on one, I can tell you for certain that what you do is you get up in the morning and you start paddling and you don't stop until it's too dark, basically.
Yeah, I wouldn't say in general that that's how I live my life with everything
no,
I do.
No, you don't.
Not
yeah,
even close.
Yeah.
But there is something about the way we've done these trips together that is rewarding.
Yeah.
And you know, and Mike T's a good kind of passive leader when he's on the trips. He likes to push and just keep going. And there's a lot of satisfaction in that type of trip when you do go out and just push yourself to the edge.
Totally.
But that's 4 or 5 days, you know, it's not like months of that or anything.
Yeah.
And certainly like, I mean, going out and just paddling a couple of miles out to an island or paddling a shorter distance all loaded up and camping, you're going to get the same type of experience.
Yeah.
Sleeping on the board, setting your gear up, you know, the experience can be had in many ways.
Yeah. Just don't invite Mike T because what he'll do is just like you'll get to where you said you were going to camp and he'll just very gently and politely and friendly in a friendly way suggest that you go a few more miles. But what you learn after a few days is that a few more miles isn't actually the destination either. It's like 10 or 12 more miles, but he just is too nice to tell you that that's where you're actually going.
Yeah. He likes to push it, but
yeah.
It's also fun to be pushed once in a while.
It is. It's amazing. It's a very cool way to just really simplify the whole experience. But, okay. I want to talk about just for folks that have never done this before, like, I mean, obviously board, paddle, your paddling gear, but what are the other essential things that people need to do a self-support trip? And what are the things that you found that work the best?
Well, it's kind of like a backpacking trip. So you could kind of think of it as like going kind of like ultralight backpacking.
Yeah.
Only you're putting your stuff in dry bags.
Yeah.
I mean, we're obviously huge Watershed fans, so we use all the Watershed bags.
Yep.
We just love them. They're the best.
Yeah.
And the board is pretty much the tie downs on the Selfie 14 are kind of set up nicely for a large bag in the rear, a large bag just forward of the paddler, and then a tapered kayak bag on the bow.
Yeah.
And that allows you to just pierce the wind. If you are in a slight bit of white water, that water won't stall the board so hard. If you're punching through small waves on a board with a bag on the front, that bag can actually act like a brake.
Yeah.
And every time you hit it, it throws your weight forward and makes it really awkward.
Right, right.
So the Selfie 14 is designed to have a tapered kayak stow bag on the bow, which works in really well.
Yeah.
The other things you're thinking about are just, you know, eating, camping, doing that stuff. So, you know, a lightweight tent, a lightweight sleeping pad, jet boil, stove.
Yeah, jet boil's key.
Yeah, they're just amazing. They work so well. And then really freeze-dried meals, the backpacker pantry or whatever you like to eat, those types of meals. and lots of quick power bars or, you know, protein bars and those things to keep your engine running.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
Mike T won't let you stop.
Yeah, you need a lot of calories if you're going Mike T. Yeah. And so in case people don't know what we're talking about with the kayak style bag, it's, you described it pretty well, but it's meant to go behind you in a kayak. So it is tapered and it actually works amazing on the front of the board. And there's a little D-ring up by the handle so you can anchor the front of that bag down. And then your board does have this nice taper. And so when we did our trip, you know, we knew we were going to run some white water. And so we didn't use the bungees. We used the stainless steel D-rings. And then we used like a P-cord to tie the bags down really hard. Is that what you recommend, is like cam straps or cord?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on what type of trip you want to do. If you're going to do a flat water trip,
yeah,
I mean, the bungees are going to work great.
Yeah.
They're going to hold your gear on there. If the board rolls over, it's going to keep your stuff where it needs to be.
Yeah.
So in any sort of a flat water, you know, trip, the bungees are going to work great.
Yeah.
If you're going to be into some white water, you probably want to just pull the bungees off and run some P-cord.
Yeah.
You could use a cam strap. Sometimes the cam straps are a little bit of a wrestling match.
Yeah.
So some P-cord and just tying your gear down with P-cords really works well. And then your gear is cinched to the board. It will not come off the board.
Yeah. Yeah, we tested that theory pretty good down in Cataract Canyon there. Where
yeah, there was
my
some
board
upside down
a few
boards.
Times. Yeah. Yeah, and I was thinking too, if you're doing a trip on the ocean, you knew like maybe you needed knew you needed to do a surf landing, you would also probably want to use P-cord and tie that stuff down.
Yeah, if you're going to be in any situation where your board's going to be upside down and getting tossed around,
yeah.
You probably want to go ahead and switch out to P-cord.
Yeah.
But that's real easy. You can just undo your P-cord and throw your bungees back on after you're done. Or, you know, stick with P-cord.
Yeah. Awesome, man. So what you got, I know you're kind of cooking up another plan right now. You got another trip on the horizon?
Yeah, you're invited.
All right, man, I'm in, dude. I had so much fun, man. I'm definitely going to try to go.
Yeah, part of this is trying to dream up the next stretch and trying to figure out some crazy, crazy section to accomplish. So
yeah.
I've got some ideas. We'll see if I can sucker you guys in again.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, at least I know it's coming now. But well, right on, Zach. Thanks, man. Thanks for the time. And yeah, we'll look forward to the next Sufferfest with you.
All right. Looks good. Thanks.
So next up, I'm going to talk to our team rider and friend, Bradley Hilton. And Bradley is a guy who hasn't even reached his 30th birthday yet, but has had a lot of, he's a classic old soul. I'll put it that way. You know, I'm almost 20 years older than him. And sometimes I feel like calling him up for advice. He's just the Zen master of bad fish and a really talented paddler and a great guy who's been on a bunch of these self-support trips with us. And so I'm going to get into an interview with Bradley Hilton. I should mention at the beginning of this interview, I talked to Bradley a little bit about his initial quarantine he spent in El Salvador. So I'm kind of giving it away that I actually recorded this interview back in early May. So just wanted to let you know in case you were like, oh, that's weird that he's talking about being stuck in El Salvador. That's what was going on there behind the curtain. Bradley, how's it going?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing really good. Thank you.
Good, man. Hey, welcome home. You just got home, right? A few days ago.
Yeah, I did. I just made a trip from El Salvador, where I spent the first half of my quarantine, and made it back to Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Wow. Yeah. So you left for El Salvador before the stay-at-home orders and before it really got crazy with coronavirus, right? You went down there just to go surfing, and then everything hit while you were there?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. I went down there early March, and at that point, I was not quite aware of the levity of the situation or what it could potentially be. So went down there for a surf trip, and about 10 days in, you know, some of my things on the calendar here back in the United States started getting pushed back. So I just decided to extend my surf trip. And quickly after that, the airport in El Salvador, the international airport, shut down, and we went on a lockdown for 30 days. So I was there, staying with some friends, just kind of hunkered down for a long time, not able to surf the entire time. But then at a certain point, I decided it was time to get back and jumped on a humanitarian flight back to Colorado.
Wow. And so yet from the little bit we talked while you were down there, it sounded like when you say lockdown, it sounds like it was quite a bit stricter than what we've been dealing with up here.
Yeah, I'd say it was. You know, El Salvador's similar size to like the state of Massachusetts, actually, and there's 6 million people who live there. So they can control things a little bit easier just because of how much smaller the country is, right?
Sure.
And the president there was really communicating very clearly to everybody leading into it. They were kind of ahead of the curve, and so they started shutting things down. I think just in anticipation of their healthcare system being overrun, which is obviously not built even close to what ours is, which is also being overrun in some places.
So you literally couldn't surf. You could be right there on the beach, but you weren't allowed to go out onto the beach or out into the water.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. They shut the beaches down. I was real close to it. So around the full moon, we did get up pre-dawn for a couple sessions and catch some waves under the full moon.
Nice.
And then as the sun started to come up, we snuck back in.
Right. Wow, man. Well, yeah, glad you made it home. And sounds like it was probably still worth the trip anyway.
Yes, absolutely worth the time.
Right on. Well, hey, you know, I wanted to talk to you today about, we're talking about self-support paddling today, and you've done a fair bit. You were kind of the third of the three amigos to get added into Zach and Mike T's crew of self-support trips. And then I was lucky enough with also with Gmo Guillermo Loria to get added in this last fall. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the experience of self-support paddling and, you know, what it's meant to you and how it motivates you for paddling in a different way than maybe some of the other stuff that you do. And so, but before we jump into that, just give us quick background a little bit on your experience with river trips, multi-day river trips and guiding and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. So my experience as far as multi-day trips on the river, started on the upper Colorado, which is near where I'm from. Just with some simple family weekend trips, you know, one or two nights growing up, you know, a handful of those. And then I was lucky enough to get onto a Desolation Gray multi-day trip on the Green River as part of a program, outdoor recreation program that was started in my high school. So it's, you know, junior year of high school, you have the opportunity to go down with some of the teachers and some of your fellow students onto a multi-day river trip. So that was really illuminating for sure. And then in 2017, I started guiding professionally in Dinosaur National Monument with an outfitter called Adrift Dinosaur, and learned how to be a multi-day raft guide. And then also we incorporate stand-up paddling into our trips as well. So I guide those trips on a paddleboard.
Cool. Yeah. And, so that's raft supported stand-up paddling, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fully supported, like a regular huge multi-day trip. And we just bring along paddle boards for people to kind of have their individual experience and learn how to paddle down rivers on their river trip.
On the Green and the Yampa Dinosaur National Park has got both the Green and the Yampa River, and then they join and become the Green River below there. But Gates of Lodore, and then the Yampa Canyon.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah,
awesome.
Correct.
Those are great trips. And so you have some experience doing multi-day raft trips and bringing the stand-up paddleboard along. And you did when did you do your first self-support trip on a paddleboard? Was that, I guess that would have been on the Selfie 16, the hand-shaped ones that Zach made.
Yeah, that was on the Selfie 16. That was, Mike, I don't even know what year that was.
Yeah, that's all right. It was a few years ago. Yeah.
Was that 2016?
I think it was. Yeah. I think it was 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the Big Lake Powell trip that Zach and Mike T did, and I believe that would be 2016.
Yeah. So yeah, my first multi-day trip on a paddleboard, self-supported, was in the fall of 2016 down the San Juan River, and that really opened my eyes to just what was possible, especially if we have the right equipment and choose a stretch of river that's manageable for a paddleboard. with a lot of gear on it. And so that was the first time we did that.
And what was, I mean, some of the differences are obvious, but what did you like better or worse, or what were the differences between doing a multi-day river trip with a raft support and then, you know, tying all your gear to a paddleboard and taking off down a river?
So honestly, I think that doing the self-support trip is a lot, it's obviously a lot more simple. And I think it's easier just because you're taking care of, you're totally just taking care of yourself. And you're not taking care of a whole group of people. So there's just way, way less gear. As you know, packing for a multi-day trip with rafts is a massive undertaking. With coolers and kitchens and bathrooms and all kinds of safety gear and games and all the stuff. So on a selfie trip, what we do is just pick a small duffel bag or two, a couple of our dry bags, throw in what we think we need, and then at the put in, pull a bunch of the stuff that we probably don't need out.
Right.
And so it's just super simple, you know? So that's the main difference, is that you're literally just bringing the bare minimum.
Yeah. I've raised my kids doing river trips. That's kind of our summer vacation, you know, all group of friends here. We all put in for various permits, and, you know, whoever gets permits invites other people. And, you know, ever since my kids were very young, that's sort of what we've done as our summer vacations, is take these multi-day river trips around the West. And I absolutely love them, but you have to imagine, essentially, especially if you're a family, you know, basically taking your house and putting it on a boat and then going down a river. I mean, that's a raft trip is not an exercise in minimalist camping. It's like, you know.
No, I mean, it's essentially car camping.
That's right. Exactly.
Which is kind of nice sometimes. I always like, especially with guests on the river, I kind of like to tell them like, hey, we're, you know, here's my raft. It's 16 feet long. This is essentially like a pickup truck. So we're throwing in everything we got.
That's right. Yeah. We're going to float down river.
No.
But of course, the consequence of that is that you spend a tremendous amount of time just tying and untying objects from your raft. Like, if you're in charge of that raft, either as a guide or in my case as, you know, dad in charge of the minivan, basically that means you spend a fair amount of your river trip loading and unloading. And I love the experience, but man, to just be able to pull a couple of dry bags off a paddleboard and then just flop into the sand or go for a walk or whatever, that's a really, really different experience on a multi-day trip.
It really is. So on a paddleboard expedition trip, you know, you're really maximizing the time that you want to spend on the water and at camp. So there's not a lot of tinkering around, you know. Like you said, you just pull a couple dry bags off onto the beach and you're there, you're ready to go. Everything's sitting there. And then you have maximum time on the water and minimum time setting up camp or tying things on or whatever it may be.
And so do you think that, or can you talk about at least how that simplicity and how that aspect of it changes the experience for you?
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge part of it for sure. You know, I think first of all, part of the magic of doing multi-days on a paddleboard, kind of like expedition style, is just committing to something, committing to a mission. Right. So
yeah.
we decide on a stretch of river that often includes flat water and some moving water. And just committing to it kind of like sets this thing in motion of like adventure and anticipation.
Yeah.
And just for the just simply having that kind of ahead of you, you know, really brings everything together even before you get on the water. Like even just driving to the put-in is part of the adventure. And so you really, once that happens, you really feel like that the destination is in the journey, you know, like we're not really, it's not like we're going downriver and then getting to some location where it's like, oh, now we've made it. We're, you know, this is beautiful. It's like, it's all beautiful.
Right. Right.
From the moment you commit until when you hit your pillow back at home, once you've got home, you know?
Right. Yeah. You know, I've always said that for me, there's no form of relaxation or like shoving off the bank on a multi-day trip down a river, because it's literally just, it's figuratively and literally, like you said, a commitment. And the minute you drift 5 feet from that put in, you're, whatever else is going on, or whatever you didn't quite get dialed in, or, you know, whatever you forgot, or whatever thing you're leaving behind at work, it's literally now out of reach. You know, you're not going back upstream. And so the, for me, that, like, that exhale of when I shove off on a multi-day river trip, there's nothing else in my life where I can kind of have that same experience of just, well, I'm not going back there, so I'm good. You know, just whatever else happens, I'm just going down this river now.
Absolutely. And your to-do list shrinks exponentially, right? Like in an instant.
Right.
Just there's not options. There's not options to take care of all the open loops that you have going back home, you know, off the river. So literally, especially, you know, on one of these trips, like your to-do list shrinks down to paddle all day long, or however long you choose, feed yourself, sleep.
Yeah.
Those are the three things. And you just repeat that. And sometimes, you know, our trips are anywhere from 4 to 8 days. And so to have that, those things be on your to-do list for that amount of time is a huge relief.
Yeah. And so you know, without getting into stuff that's above our pay grade, I'll say that, you know, I read a book this winter called Masters of the Planet, all about prehistoric human history and like very early human Homo sapiens, and also, you know, the branch species of humanoid species that lived on this earth. And, you know, and we our modern life has been it's a very obvious thing to say, but it hits you profoundly that our modern life, that the time of our lives that we've lived the way we live now is so short, you know, and for tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of years, we lived another way. And I think part of it is probably that when we have to like go through all these crazy contortions to reduce our life back to what it actually, our nervous systems were set up to do, which is just sort of travel as a family, you know, secure food, rest, stay, you know, it's those things are really what we were, you know, our nervous systems were built to do. And then we've overloaded our nervous systems with all this other stuff now. And I think it's, you know, it's really the root of most people's, any, whatever level of discomfort you ever feel as a human. I think that's part of why, or maybe a very large part of why.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree more with that. And when we're living in our modern lifestyles, like all in our separate homes and driving around in our separate cars and engaging with screens all the time, sometimes it feels like that kind of innate primal feeling that our nervous system is built off of, it feels so far away and like that you can't even feel it anymore, or you don't even know how to get there.
Right.
But I can tell you that based on my experiences getting into wilderness on these trips, it is like, it's just right under the surface. Like you just need a day or two and you can totally connect straight back into that. And when you do, there's like, first of all, you're stoked because you're like, wow, this is living.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah. I'm really enjoying this, you know?
Yeah.
I've had multiple moments on these trips. I mean, especially the first one, since it was so fresh, where it was just like, wow, this is the coolest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then there comes moments for sure where this kind of like low level of tension and stress that we all are kind of feeling, especially right now, it totally melts away. And you have these moments of just like knowing deep down that everything is going to be fine.
Right.
And it's because you're back in this wild place, kind of moving at the speed of the river, you know, just focusing on yourself, taking care of the people that you're with, carrying only what you can strap onto your board. And it's just a simplicity. And then you combining that with like that simple mission that you've committed to, which is just getting to the takeout, you know, I think that's really a recipe for like a, just like a huge boost in confidence. It helps you bring insight to the things that are going on in your life off the river. And I just couldn't recommend it enough, really.
I
heard a quote. I heard a quote from a poet, David White. He's an Irish poet. And he said, "What allows you to simplify is to keep your eye on the star that you're following." Mm. And so that really resonates with me. So when applying that to one of these trips, it's like the star that you're following is just kind of the mission and the destination that you've set. But because you've set that and you can kind of keep your eye on it, you can just settle back into simplicity, and it just feels so good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is such a, I always think about, you know, just how like we have all this expensive gear and we got to go through all these contortions to get to that point where literally all we're doing is just letting this river carry us forward. You know, that's all it is. We're just going downstream. And then it's when you think about all that, for me, particularly all I have to do to get to that moment, it's kind of, I don't know, it's pretty wild, but like you said, it is really the only, maybe not the only way. Cause I had a new experience this year where I went backcountry elk hunting for the first time. And I felt a very similar type of feeling that I feel on these great river trips where I was able to just, like you say, just have a singular focus that was, you know, again, sort of, very connected to a particular, element of nature. And I had a very similar type of experience, hunting elk in the backcountry, but I do think that that's the common ingredient with all these types of experience, like you said, is making that reconnection with some wilderness.
Yeah, it is for sure. And when we do that, you know, another thing that's happening is that we're kind of reconnecting into the natural feedback loop that's happening in nature,
yeah,
you know, in the wilderness, which we've totally insulated ourselves from for the most part.
Sure.
Like we're living very comfortable lives. And, like I said, it's very insulated from any kind of risk or feedback that you might get from adverse conditions, whether you're hunting or you're paddling downriver. So to connect back to that little bit level of slight level of risk and to kind of like live right at the edge of fear, you know, mm-hmm. Not that we're putting ourselves in dangerous situations. Like what we're doing is pretty calculated. You know, we're picking safe places to paddle. We're taking care of each other, but to even introduce that level of risk again, or just have the potential of a rainstorm or wind all day, or, where are we going to find to camp, you know?
Right.
And so just working through those things with a small group of people and maintaining a positive mindset through that, is just a massive learning experience.
Wait, did we experience any wind on our trip? I don't remember.
We did experience some wind. And so you're talking about, we did, Green River,
down, Utah. Yep.
Yep, Green River, Utah, down through Labyrinth Canyon.
Yep, Stillwater and Labyrinth.
Cataract, yep. Stillwater, Labyrinth, Cataract Canyon, and into Lake Powell. And that stretch of river, especially the top side, is notorious for wind.
Yeah.
And we did experience some, but you know, I thinking back to it, that's not the first thing that comes to mind.
No, in fact, you know, well, you know, it isn't. It definitely isn't. And you know, it was funny because we were doing huge miles, and so we would get to the middle of the day when the wind would pick up, and you'd see there, you know, mostly there were canoeists on the upper stretches of that river. But before we turned into the Colorado River, that the Stillwater and Labyrinth is a pretty famous canoeing section. And we would see canoeists and they'd all be at camp by noon. And of course we were paddling like 35, 37 miles. Like there was no camp by noon for our group. And it was just funny to see the looks of the other folks on the side of the river. It was clearly we were like violating the etiquette for how you intelligently run Stillwater and Labyrinth Canyon. But no, you're right. It's like the wind was, it's uncomfortable, but that's what's amazing for me personally about these types of trips too, that I find is that
you know, when I deload my system with all of the day-to-day stress of work and life and family and whatever, and I just have, like you say, a simple mission of paddling down a river, I have all of a sudden all these reserves of energy and stamina that I think are normally occupied by that sort of like external stress factors. And so it's like, yeah, you know, I kind of can just paddle into a headwind all afternoon.
You really can. Yeah, you really do. You really do tap into some kind of life force that I think a lot of us are just needing to channel into something simple like that. Just like traveling down river or traveling across land, just like you were talking about, tapping into kind of more of our biology, you know, like a little less of the modern human and kind of dial it back a couple hundred years or a couple thousand years.
Yep. There you go.
So that energy is waiting for all of us to channel, you know, and
that's right.
Especially if you have the right gear to help you kind of do a mission like that, then it all comes together.
Awesome, man. Well, you got any trips you're cooking up in your brain right now?
Well, you know, all these trips that I've done with the Bad Fish crew have been all in the Colorado River system. And so just looking at that map and kind of drawing, like, you know, considering how much mileage that we've done in that system, I kind of have like a long-term goal, kind of a life goal, to paddle the length of all the major tributaries of the Colorado.
Cool.
And most of that would be on a paddleboard, and then obviously some of it would need to be in a kayak.
Yep.
For some of the bigger water. But that's definitely a goal that I have. I grew up at the headwaters of Colorado, and so I kind of feel like that whole watershed, and even down into the desert, is kind of like my backyard. I feel really honored to be able to live in a place like I do. So that's one goal. And then obviously I'd also like to do more flat, just pure flat water trips, you know, lower mileage. I'd really like to get up under the Great Lakes. There's just some beautiful paddling up there, beaches, islands. So I have my sights set on that as well.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, thanks for your time today. And I look forward to the next time we shove off on a river trip together.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. I don't know about you guys, but I'm inspired. I want to get on a river, get on a lake, get on the ocean, get out and paddle. Love to hear about your plans for paddling. Always love to hear about them. Shoot us an email, info@badfishsup.com. Let us know if you've got any ideas for self-support paddling. And thanks again for your patience with us while we got through the busy season. I'm going to try to get more regular with these podcasts. Really appreciate all the positive feedback we've received. If you have an opportunity to rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to it, Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever, we would sure appreciate that. And look forward to seeing you out on the water.